Hey everyone, welcome. This is another episode of the Perigee Podcast. This is episode number 34 that we're going to have today, so thanks for dialing in. This is Chief Mass Sergeant of the Space Force, John Bentivania. And like most of the other podcasts, we have another exciting kind of topic to talk about today and some amazing guardians that are going to share some insight with us. Today, we're going to talk about the Personnel Management Act. You know, that's been a really big initiative across the service. And we finally, a couple months ago, had the opportunity to kind of start the initial phase of that and implement the authorities that the law under the 2024 National Defense Authorization Act gave us. So we'll talk more about kind of what the PMA is and what that is about. But we have guardians, of course, that are spread across the globe, and there's several that are on the line with us, and they're going to participate in today. So I'm going to kick it over. We'll start with the chief, and I'll ask you guys just kind of introduce yourself. Let us know who you are and where you're at.
All righty. Well, good day to everybody. This is Chief Master Sergeant Todd Scott. And so currently I am an Air Force reservist. I'm the one on the call that is not a guardian. So I support Chief Benavania's office as an IMA to the office of the Chief Master Sergeant of the Space Force. And in that role, what I'm doing specifically for Chief Benavania is his representative with the Personnel Management Act in working with Air Force Reserve Command and with the Space Force S1 and talent management community to implement the Space Force Personnel Management Act. I've been kicking around space for my entire Air Force career been an IMA since 2019. I've also been a traditional reservist, an AGR, and active duty. So I have a little experience in the reserve realm, and that's why he brought me on board for this effort. Over.
Hey, thanks, Chief. And I think you forgot to mention that, you know, you have a long lineage of service. You were also a sailor at one point, were you not?
That is correct. Yeah. So I started my career in the Navy as a Navy corpsman. So medical support, working both in naval hospitals around the globe and also supporting the U.S. Marine Corps as medical support to a rifle company in the Marine Corps for 3 years. And then I made the switch over to the Air Force.
Yep. Hey, thanks. Thanks for sharing. I appreciate it. All right. So, Tyler, I'll pass over to you.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chief. Actually, Chief Scott, I'll say I learned something that I really like about you. You're a doc in the Marine Corps. I started my career in the Marine Corps. So those docs are near and dear to our heart. But for those on the line, I am Master Tyler Oldmiller. Go by Minnick. Currently, I am at the Weapons and Tactics at Space Operations Command, working up there to do a lot of our tactics development. We actually just concluded the TACDEV Con last week. So looking forward to talking with yourself and talking through the transfer of how the PMA has gone for myself.
Hey, thanks a lot. Did you say you go by Minnick?
Mimic.
Mimic.
Yes, Chief.
Oh, Mimic. Okay, I didn't know that. So I learned something new today myself. I'm going to write that down here. All right, so Athena, we'll go over to you.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Chief. I'm Specialist 4 Athena Reese. I'm currently a student with the 9th Combat Training Squadron getting ready to go to One Stops and do operations there.
All right. Hey, thanks for sharing. I appreciate it. So we'll just jump right into it. So just to kind of baseline everybody, so the Personnel Management Act, essentially what it allows the Space Force to do, it gives us the authority to create a single component within the service of the Space Force. And what does it allow us to do? You know, traditionally, in the Air Force, the reserve component or like the individual mobilization systems or the part-time individuals, if you will, in the reserve, support the Air Force. And what we wanted to do in the Space Force, because of the size and how we do our mission, we thought there was efficiencies in having a single component where everyone in the component is just a guardian. We're guardians within the Space Force. And as guardians within the Space Force, we have the opportunity to fill either full-time or part-time roles. And that's kind of the journey that we're on. So rather than have two separate components, like in the Air Force, as an example, or even some of the other services like in the Army, rather than have a reserve component, we're just one component and we're all guardians. We just have fill roles at a part-time or kind of full-time. And so we've been on a journey to try and implement those authorities that Congress has given us. And we have 5 years to do so. But the first thing that made sense to us was to start bringing over some reservists that were currently serving in the reserve and offer them full-time kind of opportunity as we try to figure out what the part-time roles are going to be. So as Chief Scott mentioned, he has vast experience and background, you know, as being a traditional reservist himself and an IMA today, and just steeped in space experience. You know, I had a chance to work with Chief Scott. You know, he was my IMA when I was the SEL at Space Operations Command many years ago. And he was also worked for Chief Toberman, in fact, ran Space Operations Command for several months as we were going through transitions. But, you know, one of the reasons I asked Chief Scott to come and join the team here in the Office of Chief Master of Space Force, because, you know, not only because of his vast experience and knowledge, he's a great teammate, but we knew that PMA was going to be implemented and leveraging his experience and credibility to help kind of work through that on behalf of the office. So Todd, if you could just talk a little bit about, you know, you were intimately involved in this first kind of phase that kind of resulted in Mimic Athena coming into the service. And there were, and by the way, there's a total of five so far that have transferred over. Unfortunately, the other guardians couldn't make it onto the podcast today. But for the initial five, I think what we're calling the AFA five, PMA five, you guys have your own little nickname. That's great. But Chief Scott, you were intimately involved in that. If you want to just share a little bit how that process went to kind of get us through that initial tranche, if you will.
Sure. So back in July, we held the first of several PMA boards. In fact, the one that we held in July was sort of a dry run for the process. You know, there are a lot of reservists currently serving in Air Force Reserve Command that have been supporting Space Force missions since the inception of the Space Force, and in fact, under Air Force Space Command as well, going back for many, many years. So when the Space Force stood up, December 20th of 2019, the reserve component was not something that they integrated into the Space Force. The Space Force stood up as only an active component, but they continued to utilize the skilled operators that had been supporting space missions under Air Force Space Command while we worked to design and propose through legislation the Space Force Personnel Management Act. This act was passed in the National Defense Authorization Act of 2024, and the implementation began about a year ago. So we are 1 year into the five-year transition, and I think that the important thing to note is that the S1 community and the talent management community and Air Force Reserve Command as well are doing their due diligence in trying to make sure that as they implement this new structure that we're protecting the careers of the Air Force reservists that are making this commitment to join the Space Force, but also ensuring that nothing that we do breaks a mission, so to speak. So it has been a little, slow getting off the ground. It was July that we held this first dry run of the board, and we did get probably, I think it was almost 60 applicants for these first five positions, to kind of shake out the process, review their records, allow the S1 folks to hold a small board, and then allow the talent management folks to go through the processes of inserting these members into the talent management process without impacting the current guardians that are already in that process. So they were able to match these five members with assignments that capitalize on their experience and help to, put them in a position where their careers can continue on without impacting it, as well as continuing to support Space Force missions. Subsequent to that first board in July, we held a one-week board in September and a one-week board just last week in November. And both of those boards looked at hundreds of records of current serving Air Force reservists that are applying for full-time positions in the Space Force. And we're going through the process there. We will probably release the results of the first board, in about a week. They'll go first to, you know, commanders release to the members Air Force Reserve leadership, and then there'll be a public release shortly before Thanksgiving. I don't want to actually throw out a date because it's going through senior leader approval right now at Air Force Reserve Command and then at S1, and I don't want to tie it down to a date, but we're very close to the results of the first board, and then the second board results will come out probably after the new year, and then late January we will hold a third board. So over the course of this fiscal year, we will integrate hundreds of reservists into full-time positions in the Space Force. And then after that, we will work to put in place the policy and guidance for part-time members to be able to join the Space Force, likely in fiscal year 27. More to come on that. Over.
Thanks. I appreciate it. So it's a complicated process because to your point, like you said, Chief, that, you know, we want to make sure that we do things smartly. We don't want to cause any necessary harm to the members themselves, but also to the missions in which they support. And you know, I should have said this in the beginning, and thanks for kind of mentioning that, made me think about it, Chief. But, you know, for most of my career, and I've been an operator, a space operator doing this business for about 26 years, I don't think there's been a mission set that I haven't executed that didn't have a reserve associate unit or reservists that were kind of absolutely embedded to what we do. So, you know, when the Space Force stood up, though we didn't have the reserve component come over immediately, which predominantly was a 310th Space Wing under the Air Force, we knew that the talent, the capacity, and the skills that our reserve teammates brought to the fight was something that we needed to do to execute. I mean, through the years, you know, when I did missile warning, right, it was 8 SWIS. When I was an aggressor, it was 26th space aggressors. So, I mean, for most of my career, whether it be IMAs or you know, traditional reserve associate units, 19 SOPs with 2 SOPs, you know, it's very critical part of how we present forces to the combatant commands. But this is just a different way of doing it and offering a different way to serve for those members under a single component of the Space Force. So trying to make sure that we can leverage all that talent and have a process that's inviting to them is really important to us. But, you know, no one's being forced to join, right? Everyone has a kind of personal decision to make. Just like when I joined the Space Force years ago, I could have stayed in the Air Force, but decided we all have a personal choice as an all-volunteer force. So I just wanted to say that because it's really important to me that our reserve teammates out there understand how much I value them. But Athena, I was going to go over to you. So you're in the 9th Combat Training Squadron, I think is what you said now. But if you could tell us, you know, so before you became a Guardian, what were you doing? What were you doing as in the reserve in the Air Force?
Yes, Chief. So before I became a Guardian, I was actually at 19 SOPs doing GPS operations. I did both, like, operations on the floor as a vehicle system operator, and I was also involved in the modernization efforts with OCX as well.
Were you a traditional reservist? Were you an IMA? What was your role within the reserve?
I was a traditional reservist. I was on MPA orders, so I was basically active duty for most of my time with 19 SOPs.
Okay. So are you willing, are you interested in sharing a little bit? So, you know, as we talked about this journey and you found out that, you know, hey, the Space Force is opening up the first kind of application window to kind of make the transfer, you know, what was that like for you? What was that thought process?
Of course. So when I actually joined the reserves as a space operator, I had done that specifically to be in space, since at the time there wasn't any active duty openings. So this was a great opportunity for me to jump into the active duty side of Space Force and continue doing the space operations job.
So you're on MPA days at the time when you made the transfer, but you know, through your career, was there a time when you were actually a traditional reservist where you were not on full-time orders and you were doing a traditional part-time role within the reserve?
Yeah, when I got back from training, like from tech school, I was just a normal reservist for a little while doing the UTAs until I became certified on the GPS system.
Now, how long were you on MPA? What was the time frame that you were on full-time orders? Was it a couple of years, a year or so?
Probably a little over a year total.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So from a day-to-day life, you know, getting up and kind of going to work and kind of being in uniform every day, not so much of a drastic maybe transition for you other than, you know, going from wearing an Air Force uniform to a Space Force uniform, but your kind of day-to-day routine from being on full-time MPA orders over to the Space Force is pretty seamless.
Right.
Now you're not at 19 stops. You're not doing GPS or PNT anymore. You said you're at the NICE Combat Training Squadron. Are you a student there? You're going through course?
Yes, sir. I'm awaiting training. So a little bit, I guess, of a difference there versus what I was doing at 19 stops, since when I was awaiting training there, I was just a normal traditional reservist. But as a full-time student now, I get to see a little bit more of what that training pipeline is like.
So how did that process work? So, you know, you were certified and trained in the GPS weapon system, and I'm assuming you were, you know, working crew, or you were, you know, part of the combat force that were presented to the combatant command, but now you're doing something different. Why the change? How did that happen as a result of your transfer into the Space Force?
Yeah, I would say it's part of, the whole transfer process, since going to a different unit and needing to get trained up in their weapon system. Overall, it's kind of a similar sort of job as a, I guess, vehicle technician, but just getting to see different weapon systems and how everything works together.
Okay. So, Master Odenweller, so, you know, same kind of question for you. What were you doing before you became a Guardian?
Hi, Chief. Excuse me. So before I became a Guardian, I was the op suit for the 428 Electromagnetic Warfare Flight. They were a new unit being stood up to be a classic associate unit to the 4th Electromagnetic Warfare Squadron. So I was sitting there as their operations superintendent for since its inception till my transfer date to become a Guardian back in September. Before that, I was at the 380th for a long period of time, the 380th Electronic Warfare Squadron as well. Did my time there both as part-time traditional reservist. I did the MPA gig for a number of years, and then took AGR jobs within their weapons and tactics flights for that before getting sent off to school and then coming back to become the superintendent for the 428.
So when you initially joined the service, did you join directly into the reserve or did you have active duty time?
I joined directly in the Marine Corps Reserve, correct.
Okay, so Marine Corps Reserve, and then you transitioned into the Air Force Reserve.
Correct.
Okay, and Athena, same for you. You enlisted directly into the reserve.
Yes, Chief, I went directly to the reserve.
Okay. So Master Odenweller, so, you know, you have obviously more time in service than Athena does. So, you know, your journey, now you're at the Weapons and Tactics. Now, when you said you came back from school, what school were you at that you went to?
So I am a graduate of the Air Force Weapons School. For those who have passes or weapons officers, weapons instructors in their squadrons, that's a course that I'm a graduate of. So that was actually a really good opportunity that I got to go to as a reservist, because the unit in the squadron and the wing had the backing. I had their backing to go and further my career, because it in turn helped progress the rest of the unit.
So that's great. So you secured one of the reserve seats to go to the weapons school. And so I'm assuming then from a specialty perspective, you were one Charlie six in the reserve?
Correct.
Okay. And now you're working in weapons and tactics at Space Operations Command?
Correct. So I sit in the S-733 doing weapons and tactics.
So, you know, I asked a question and I asked Athena the same question. And the reason I'm interested, you know, when for you personally, when the call came out with the opportunity to be able to do this, kind of what was a little bit of your thought process? How'd you do it? And I say that because for me personally, when the Space Force was established, I was a command chief of what was then called 14th Air Force out of Vandenberg. And I had been an airman, obviously, my entire career. I enlisted directly into active duty. And even though I've been doing space operations, my entire career as a maintainer for the first couple of years, it was still kind of a significant decision for myself and my family, to change services. I mean, that is no small kind of decision to do that. So I know for myself, right, it was, as excited as I was, it was still a significant kind of decision and discussion, with my family as I walked through that. So, you know, Mimic, when you were going through that, what was going through your head? What was your, thoughts when that opportunity came up?
So honestly, Chief, it's kind of been one of those things. The wife and I have been having a discussion for a lot longer than just the PMA, because when Space Force became a thing, the question initially was, do you want to go over? And the answer was yes. And we talked about a lot of those things because she's been with me my entire military career, and so she's at the forefront of a lot of my decision making.
You're a smart
man.
She
backs me 100% with what I do, but at the end of the day, we have those conversations as a family. Everything that happens in my career is us. So when the opportunity came up this go around to, hey, do you want to go through this process early and help figure out some of the kinks and the bumps and just get through and go to Space Force and become a guardian? It was pretty much a no-brainer. We already had that answer set in stone. So for us, a lot of it just came down to, okay, what does the logistics look like, right? Was this a PCS? Was this a PCA? Do I stay in Colorado? Do I go up to Denver? Do I go somewhere completely different in my career? And so those are the questions that we had to discuss. But for us, it was a lot easier of an answer of, yes, you're going over.
Yeah, you know, we use a phrase all the time. I think it's a common phrase across, you know, all the services, but, you know, we recruit and service members, but we retain families, right? And because to the point of bringing your family into the discussion, this is family business as we kind of go through that, which is really important perspective to have, not only from a senior leader policy kind of maker, but also, right, the understanding and acknowledgement for guardians, regardless of whether the rank they are, that these are family discussions that kind of occur as you go through that. Athena, you know, we talked about kind of the assignment in Master Sergeant Odenwiller talked about, is it a PCS, is it a PCA? We know that you were already on Schriever, you were doing your time at 19th Ops and now at the 9th Combat Training Squadron to work in Delta 9. But can you share a little bit, you know, how did that work for, did you apply for jobs? Were there jobs offered to you? What was the process through the PMA process, through the inter-service transfer process, that kind of got you to staying at Schriever and going to the 9th Combat Training Squadron?
Yeah, so we have been given sort of a dream sheet, if you will, in terms of assignment preferences. And my line of thought was I wanted to stay within an operational squadron. I really enjoyed doing ops while I was at 19th Ops doing GPS and wanted to continue doing that sort of same job. And had the opportunity to move more into the orbital warfare side of things that just happened to still be at Schriever. So that was kind of my thought process, especially as a junior enlisted. That's, in my opinion, where you get really the meat of what the Space Force is and what we do. And getting that sort of experience as a foundation was important to me.
Oh, that's good. I know that, you know, and Chief Scott, if you can kind of share, you know, through the process, since you were kind of with that initial board and doing the ones now, can you kind of walk through some of the the policy or guidelines when it comes to, as we're offering individuals from the reserve to come over, that discussion between, what's the quote-unquote dream sheet, right? What are the kind of desires of the member comparing that with the needs of the service?
Sure, absolutely. So through the application process, and remember, we've held two more boards now, close to 500 applicants combined, officer and enlisted, for the two boards. As you can imagine, the opportunities that the the talent management office has to offer are going to be all around the world. But through the process, when they apply for the position in the Space Force, they do ask the members, do you want to remain in place at your current duty location? Do you want to PCS, or you don't care, not applicable? Tell me what the needs are, and I'll do what the needs of the Space Force are. And looking, back on those boards that we held, it was actually about a 50-50 with members that would like to remain in place and members that either preferred a PCS move, a permanent change of station, or they didn't have a preference in that. So that was actually a welcome surprise, because it is a challenge for the talent management office to, obviously let everybody stay in place, with these, new people coming into the Space Force as guardians from Air Force Reserve Command. We certainly couldn't have 100% of them remain in place. So through that process, they were able to narrow down, okay, these members would like to PCS, these members really don't have a preference. These will try to keep them in their current role. And in fact, they also asked their organization, is there a role that they're currently filling that is critical to a mission? Athena had mentioned the testing that 19SOPS does, the testing and training for the next generation of the operational control segment, OCS. Well, if you have an operator that is integral to that testing effort, as we get really close to the transition from the current system that, the second navigation warfare squadron uses to OCX, we don't want to pull that person out of that effort and, have an impact on that testing or the current training of the folks that are going to take over that system. So they also, the talent management also had to take that into account as well, or perhaps somebody that's serving in the missile warning enterprise that might be, scheduled for a SPA 4 gen rotation, a Space Force generation, rotation coming up on crew. Those had to be taken into account as well. And then, ETMO, the Enterprise Talent Management Office, they look at the current assignments that are available, look at the skill set that that member brings in their application package, and try to match them with something that obviously provides them an opportunity to further their career, but also fills a spot in the, mission that they're looking to put somebody into. So I think that the talent management office did an incredible job looking across these packages that we received to try to make sure that we take care of the member, but we also have to keep in mind we have to take care of the mission that the U.S. Space Force has. And I think so far that process has been working well. Obviously, there will be some people that may end up in positions where they have to move around. But, they're understanding that when they apply for a full-time position, that there are cases where we will have to have a PCS move. And, it could be any, you've been up to Peak, and, of course, across Europe and around the world, there are incredible opportunities for guardians in remote locations, but also in some pretty interesting locations, if you do want to see the world through the U.S. Space Force. Over.
Hey, thanks for that. And that brings up a really good question. I was asked Athena. So it sounds like you've been in Colorado, other than going to tech school at Vandenberg, I assume. You've been in Colorado your entire career.
That is correct.
Are you from Colorado?
Yes, actually. I'm a Colorado Springs native.
Okay, so now, right, that you're a guardian, and you know, you're wearing Space Force blue on your uniforms, and this entire ecosystem of opportunities that is the Space Force has opened up to you. And it really has grown, especially from an enlisted opportunity perspective, since we were established, as we grew in missions and locations and opportunities. Athena, were you at all kind of tempted when you went through this process to look for opportunities outside of Colorado Springs?
Definitely. As Chief Scott was mentioning, there's a lot of different and really cool places that the Space Force has available, especially now compared to when I went to tech school and where I saw some of my classmates going. But I think the reason why I wanted to stay at Schriever was the orbital warfare mission. But as I progress through my career, I'll definitely look beyond just Colorado Springs and Schriever of all the different opportunities that are available to us.
Yeah, I think that's one of the benefits of the kind of the single component, you know, with full-time and part-time positions, is that Guardians, when this is fully matured, will have that, you know, access to almost the best of both worlds, right? Where you have access to opportunities to fill a part-time role, but also the complete ecosystem of opportunities and challenges that the service has to offer. And it maybe make it easier for individuals to navigate, you know, that single component than maybe traditionally exists today with two separate, you know, active duty and reserve components today. So we're really looking to see how that benefits. And I, Athena, I wish you the best of luck as you, you know, have, you know, get through your training, and then, you know, when it's time for you to move on to the next greater thing where you get a chance to go. And if you get stationed someplace cool, and if I'm still in this office, maybe I can get a chance to come. You can send me an invitation, especially if it's like in Europe or something. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Chief.
Hey, Mimic, you know, I know for you, like I said, much more time in service, much more experience. You know, when you applied to transfer over, right, and you and your family said, okay, I'm going to make the decision to join the Space Force. But before you signed the paperwork and swore in, did you and your family know what assignment was going to be offered to you, like where you were going to be? Because you know, one of the things was the discussion is the sequencing and how we do this, the board, the application, when ETMO can let you know what assignment options we have, where we think we need your skills and talent. And then, you know, when does the actual separation from the reserve and then joining the Space Force occur? So what was that like for you? Was there an option space there? Or, you know, what were the decisions you had to make?
Yeah, so Chief, there was definitely a lot of option space when it came to assignment selection, knowing where I'm going before I actually do my swearing and then ultimately swearing in. For me, it was working with the ETMO team, working with some of the other folks in the weapons school community, and trying to figure out where to best fit, right? And it came down to, okay, we're going to look to put you in this position here. We'll work on the back end to make the assignments process and selection work, and get you slotted for that position. And then it actually worked out pretty well, because the way the order of operations goes for the actual transfer is you get your assignment pick, you send your recommendations up, they come back and say, here's where we're going to look to put you. And then you get your orders, and then you do your swear-in. So you do your swear-in, and you're set and gun, but you know exactly where you're going based on those orders, right? So there was no surprise. There was no lag time between, okay, yeah, I'm sworn in, but I have no clue where I'm going. It was, I know where I'm going, and now I'm swearing.
Yeah, I think, and to, you know, Chief Scott's point, you know, as he's been on the team working with the how we tried to work through the sequence and the process, I think there was something from a service perspective that we wanted to provide as much information to the service members in the reserve as we possibly could. Because like I said earlier, right, no one is being forced to join the Space Force. So, you know, having that discussion to make sure that the members and their families knew, you know, where that initial assignment was going to be, where we needed you, so there wasn't any kind of hardship or surprise to service members. Like, you swear in, you have a service commitment, you're active duty now full time, and guess what, we're moving you. So I think having that discussion prior to or having that information prior to those kind of life-changing decisions are made by the members are really important. And I'm glad that we're able to kind of execute that. And but what both of you were saying, it seems like that was favorable to help you make and you and your families make informed decisions before you signed that paperwork and took that oath. So that's really good. Mimic, I have another question for you. So, you know, you were in the Marine Reserve, then you transitioned to the Air Force Reserve. Now you're Space Force full-time. That's kind of a lot of transitions, right? And today you sit there as a mass sergeant. And, you know, promotion processes and rules in the reserve component are a little different than on the active duty side. Can you share a little bit about, like, so you were a mass sergeant in reserve, but you're still a mass sergeant today. So we talked about the assignment piece, but, you know, what about, you know, your years of service experience and, you know, you got, you know, your points and everything. How did that work with your actual grade and rank?
So if I understand correctly, Chief, so the transitioning over to the Space Force, there was kind of the bit of the question of like, hey, what happens, right? Do I get my time converted? Do I go back to an active duty conversion scale? And now I have to kind of look at reset time and service, time and grade. But as I started digging into a bit more about how the Space Force promotion process works and how they're looking at the eligibility and retention for grade promotions and things like that, I found out that actually for myself and what I interpret for a lot of the reserves that would come over, there wouldn't be any reduction, right? And the carryover going forward in the rest of my career, it seems like I'm actually going to be a bit more in line with kind of the rest of my year group. I know year group's not a term we use enlisted, but if I look at how much active duty time I have and similar folks on the active duty side who have just been active duty, it seems like I'd be kind of moving along at similar paces with them. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, no, it's important. And again, right, a lot of that kind of information and you know what that was going to look like was all provided to you prior to having you make that final decision to join the service, to join the Space Force. Did you have all the information?
Correct.
Prior?
Yeah. A lot of that information was there.
Yeah, no, that's really important. Again, as we kind of work through this, because I think there's been onesie twosies, right, where people transition from the reserve into active duty, and I think there's been kind of different rule sets for some of that. But in mass, under the PMA and the single component, there was a lot of the discussion on how that we were going to look at and align, you know, time in the reserve and how that promotion process worked into the full-time Space Force. And again, a lot of this is trying to work through the understanding what the policy is going to be and be as transparent and upfront with the members as possible, again, to make sure that, you know, the Space Force, we understand what we're asking for, and you understand what you're getting, you know, once you kind of put on that Space Blue thread and join the team, because that's really important. Because I think, and Chief Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but there may be some members today that decide they don't want to join the Space Force for whatever reason. Can you talk a little bit about on, you know, as a reservist today, and I know you've been working with Iz and AFRIC, what for those airmen that are kind of thinking about maybe yes or no, if they decide to stay, what are you hearing as an airman yourself today? What are you hearing from the Air Force on what that process will look like if they decide not to join the Space Force?
Yeah, so, you know, in the course of this whole Personnel Management Act implementation, I will say that everybody is very thoughtfully trying to make sure that they protect the careers of the airmen who might transfer over to the Space Force, but also protect the careers if they decide to remain an airman and stay in Air Force Reserve Command. Now, there are obviously some rules we have to follow. As you know, somebody who is a senior enlisted, an E8 or an E9, does not have a lot of opportunities for retraining based obviously on their age and their time in service. So it is a little bit challenging for those individuals, But with a five-year transition of PMA, likely somebody that's an E8 or E9 is nearly or already eligible for retirement. So there's a number of things you can do if you don't want to transfer over and you are a space professional. Now, keep in mind that people that are transferring over right now are of a couple AFSCs. There's a variety of shreds of Intel. There are also a variety of shreds of cyber. And then we have our space professionals. So your Intel and your cyber individuals that want to transfer over to the Space Force, if they are not, you know, if they do not transfer over to the Space Force, they don't apply or they are not selected to join the Space Force, they have a number of opportunities because they have opportunities all over Air Force Reserve Command in AGR, IMA, TR, or ART-type positions that they can fall back on. If you're a 1 Charlie 6 space professional and you are E7 or below and you do not want to join the Space Force, because keep in mind that AFSC will go away. So they're in a little bit more of a in a commitment phase, they got to decide, do I want to go over to the Space Force? If not, I have to look for opportunities to retrain. And Air Force Reserve Command has said they will find opportunities for those folks to retrain, realign with a mission that, you know, that suits their background and their experience and education. That isn't necessarily true for an E8, E9, or when we look at field grade officers that start to become senior in their careers. But for those folks, they may have an opportunity to enter the leadership track. If you think about the 9 Golf or 9 Echo career fields, 8F, or even some special duty assignments, whether it's training or recruitment, there are other opportunities for those more senior folks. But for the others, they can retrain, they can separate if that's what they wanted to do, retire. There is also the opportunity for Air Force reservists to look at Air National Guard missions and where they may fit in, depending on their location and what assignments are available in that area. So there's a number of opportunities. And I think the most important thing to note is that they will work with the reservists to find the opportunity that is best for them, whether they're deciding to join the Space Force or if they want to remain in the Air Force and find other opportunities. Does that answer your question?
It does, thanks. And I know that we're working closely with the Air Force and Air Force Reserve Command to make sure that we're kind of making sure that we have opportunities and are informing the members so that they can make those decisions knowing what options they have on either side, whether they stay an airman and or become a guardian in the Space Force. And I appreciate teammates that we have, you know, with an AFRIC. And I know, Todd, you've been working with them closely. So thanks for kind of, because there may be some people up there that are unsure what they want to do who listen to this podcast. I want to make sure they kind of understood that. So, Athena, so question for you. So one day you're an airman, and you grew up as an airman and you had Air Force core values and, you know, you were immersed in the Air Force culture, and then you become a guardian. And, you know, at this point, we're going to be 5 years old in December. And, our guardian identity, our guardian culture, as we're developing this, the Marine Corps last weekend turned 249 years old. You know, we don't have, you know, hundreds of years, centuries of time that we developed that. So we're in the process of growing our own identity and culture as guardians. Has that been for you? Like, do you feel ready? Are you identifying as a guardian? Have we embraced you as part of the team in that journey? Because, this is much more about beyond just a uniform and ID card that you have. It's about the culture and identity and belonging of what it means to be a guardian. And you know, in addition to everything we talked about with your assignment and AFSC and your records are straight, how did the cultural transition go from an identity perspective?
Yeah, so I think since I've been working so closely with full-time guardians already, that kind of helped me transition more into the Space Force culture because I had been so closely linked to that already. I do still see the Space Force culture growing and finding its own identity away from the Air Force a little bit. And I think that's a great thing, especially as you said, since the Space Force is still so young. But I felt very welcomed by the Space Force and by other Guardians and people asking, you know, about my experiences as a Air Force reservist doing space and how that sort of ties together and what commonalities or differences there are between those two career fields.
No, I'm glad to hear that because, you know, that sense of belonging and identity is really kind of important to us as a service. It's one of the things about embracing our small size and, you know, the unique, you know, position that we're in as a service on this journey. You're going to, you know, you and all of your other teammates who wind up deciding to join the Space Force from the reserve are just going to add to the mix. They're going to help identify and create that identity and culture for decades to come. So I'm glad you started off a good start. But Mimic for you, right? So you were a Marine, right? So you grew up, you started out with Marine identity, Marine culture, then you became an airman and now you're a Guardian. How has that kind of been for you in that journey on, you know, obviously you have more time, you know, as an airman, more time with that military professional culture and identity for a change at that point in your career. How was it going for you with that?
Chief, I kind of honestly echo a lot of Athena's sentiments about how closely the reserve units work with their active duty counterparts. I also think I was a little blessed coming over from the Marine Corps side of things to land myself into a deployable unit where the bond that you get when you go downrange is pretty much like nothing else that you can develop in the military, right? There is a specific type of bond that you get when you are stuck with the same people in the same room, can't get away from each other. So I think I landed pretty lucky when I got to that unit. But then as Space Force stood up, right, our unit lived with a active duty Space Force unit. So we saw all the transitions and we saw the core values of the Space Force start getting put up on a wall. And we started hearing their conversations and going to some of their meetings where they're talking about the core values and what these things mean to the Space Force. So to me, while it's different, right, at the same time, it's drawing from a lot of those experiences that I've had throughout my entire career. And it just becomes, okay, what does this mean to the Space Force and how do I help shape those things? And I think I'm still trying to figure out my footing on how is the best way to do it because Space Force has the opportunity to do something completely new while leveraging the experiences of not only the reserve Guardians that are transferred, but the other service members that have transferred from other branches that help build a completely different and disparate identity from what space was when it was Air Force space.
Yeah, Mimic, I love that last point, right? That, you know, the phrase I use, especially in the early years, was the Space Force was born of the Air Force, but it was made of the Joint Force. Because to your point, we had inter-service transfers from the Marine Corps, the Army, and the Navy who came over to be part of this team and bringing with them years of experience and culture. But to have that blended identity to start creating that, you know, with not to create a mini Air Force, not to create a mini Marine Corps, not to create a mini Navy, but to, you know, chart our own path, be it informed by all those other experiences, but not to play on words to mimic, right, those other services. But I think being acknowledging them in our history and in heraldreds, I think is really important, but not to try to recreate it just wearing a Guardian uniform is really important on that journey. But the real question, Athena, is do you know the words to the Space Force song and can you sing it?
I have to admit, Chief, I'm still learning that one.
All right. Hey, so I'm not going to ask you to sing it. But it is really important, right? On part of that. And just a little funny story, you know, there aren't a lot of us, right? There's less than 10,000 uniformed Guardians. So, you know, when we get an opportunity to get out and represent the service, and that's all of us, regardless of, you know, how many stripes you're wearing or how many, you know, stars or bars that you have on your uniform. Or even if you're wearing a suit and tie to work, right? You know, guardians are guardians. But there's been a couple of times when I've been out and they happen to play like the Armed Forces melody, or they play the Space Force song. And I, you know, my wife and I might be the only two people in a room of hundreds who are standing up singing the Space Force song, and everyone's watching us. But I'm proud to do so. I'm proud to represent. So, but that's kind of part of this little journey that we're all on, right? You know, embracing our values, learning the Space Force song, you know, what it means to be a teammate, you know, what is guardian commitment? You know, it's beyond memorization. It's beyond checklists. It's about embracing it, living it every single day, holding each other accountable to that, holding ourselves accountable to those things that define us. And that takes time to do so. So Thina, you got some time, you know, maybe next time I'm in Colorado, next couple of months, if I see you, I may put you on the spot and ask you to sing the Space Force song. So just kind of put you on a little warning there. But so I think we've only got a couple minutes left, but I did want to kind of ask, so Mimic, you know, especially because, you know, you and your family, and you've kind of seen some processes and experiences, anything to kind of share on what we can do better, any lessons learned that you could pass on to, you know, fellow teammates that might be listening to this or thinking about it, or feedback directly to Chief Scott and I on, you know, as we continue to welcome more and more reservists into the service, especially, right, because we only did the full time so far, but anything to kind of share that would help make the experience better for future guardians?
Yeah, Chief. So I actually just spoke with the ETMO office this morning for kind of a similar feedback and kind of a process improvement. And overall, this is by and far exceeded my expectations. Having done transfers before, and they were a nightmare, this was a largely seamless process. What I would say is the ETMO team and overall the Space Force team, where at large, has done a really good job of advertising what the process looks like. The one, not even a critique at this point, it's more of, hey, let's be as transparent as possible we can through this process. There was a lot of time in between where it was just like, hey, what status? Because there's just periods of times that ETMO is working in the background. They're doing their processes in the background. And you're just kind of, hey, I haven't heard anything. It's been 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks sometimes. Can I just get status? And a lot of times that was a quick email, quick phone call, right? But I think something to the effect of kind of like, hey, status application, as it works through all of the different wickets, because by and large, ETMO was on the money when they said it's going to take 4 to 6 months to complete the process from their spider web of flowchart that they gave us during multiple town halls. They were practically on the money with how long it took. But I say that because I know some of my peers in the reserves, and a lot of times they have had very finite and granular control over their careers, and they're stepping into an arena where you're coming back to active duty where you don't have as much control, but the Space Force has done a very good job of giving you the options and the choices that best suit your family. It's just sometimes those periods of silence can be a little unnerving, right? And people will tend to feel silences given the opportunity. So that was the one major piece of advice I gave to them, is like, hey, maybe we establish like some sort of, I call it a Domino's pizza tracker, because that was the closest thing I could kind of relate it to. But just kind of see where you're at in the process, because you fire off an email and then it sits. Not the email sits, but you don't hear necessarily anything back other than received, and then it goes 3 or 4 weeks. So that was probably the biggest piece of advice I gave to them. But overall, I'm really impressed with how well this and seamless this process has done.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Mimic, and helping the team continually improve the process. You know, I think from a cultural perspective for the service, you know, we're doing a lot of amazing things, but there's always opportunities for us to do better, and that ability, I think, to kind of hot wash, look back, and kind of after action, I think, is a healthy kind of culture that we're never satisfied and always trying to be better. So I appreciate you participating in that and helping them out. What about you, Athena? Anything that that you've learned or anything you want to share that can kind of help maybe, you know, any kind of advice and or feedback to Chief Scott and I?
Yeah, I think my experience was more or less the same. The transfer process itself was pretty simple, pretty straightforward. There was a little bit of time where you're kind of waiting to hear anything while Etmo's doing their thing in the background. I would say the biggest thing sometimes is just like the little details of the admin pieces or the personnel pieces of keeping track of your own stuff and making sure that everything gets transferred properly, because sometimes the little things can fall through the cracks. And it's not the fault of anyone else, but just keeping all of your stuff ready to go, especially for anyone that's getting ready to transfer, making sure your records are correct before you move over.
Hey, thanks for that. And that's a really important point, right? I mean, there's a heavy lift on the ETMO team, and Chief Oliveria down there and her teammates are doing phenomenal work, but there's responsibility that falls on the shoulders of the individual who is transferring as well, Athena. So thanks for kind of highlighting that. Chief Scott, so hey, you know, I just want to take a chance to publicly thank you again for you know, being a great teammate and kind of helping through this process and leveraging your experience and expertise to kind of, you know, get results, right, that Mimic and Athena just talked about, right, that they had a successful transition process, and you had a big part of that. So thanks for doing that. But anything from your vantage point to kind of share on, you know, maybe, you know, you said that the list will be out for the next tranche, maybe here in the next couple of weeks, as Ms. Kelly and the SWS team are working through that. But, you know, anything you for kind of share or what we see going into the future in regards to PMA?
Well, first, my pleasure. I'm glad to be part of the team, and I certainly appreciate the confidence you've placed in me, you know, in the position that you've put me in. It has been an incredible journey from December 20th, 2019 forward, in all the responsibility that, you know, that I've been given and been able to participate in with the leadership in the Space Force. So that's awesome. And, you know, as for PMA, what I would encourage for folks that are, you know, considering at this crossroads of their career what they'd like to do, understand that this is a tremendous undertaking by the Space Force and Air Force Reserve Command to ensure that they implement the Personnel Management Act in a way that we continue to execute missions, we make sure we protect the members' career, and make sure that we're following all the guidance, intent, and rules that come along with such a large process. Keep in mind, it's not just transferring reservists over to the Space Force. The PMA also includes the implementation of an entirely new human resources management system that's still yet to come in the future. And understand, for the part-timers, while some of them may be waiting patiently for us to implement that phase of PMA, there's a lot that comes with that, being able to manage a part-timer's career and ensure that we've identified requirements that, you know, that identify the positions that the Space Force will utilize part-timers in that is appropriate for their experience, but also that is the right fit for a part-time position. Not every position in the Space Force can be a part-time position. Obviously, our operations positions, where we are, no kidding, you know, in the thick of it and, you know, part of the joint force, that is usually a full-timer filling that position. And even in the past with Air Force Reserve members, when they go on crew, they get put on active duty. They get put on MPA orders. So what the Space Force is doing is very thoughtfully identifying the appropriate positions, and most of those are going to be institutional requirements. There will be a lot of opportunities for part-timers, but if you think about that, education, training, testing, perhaps doctrine, guidance, things like that, perhaps even recruitment or alternate duty locations, things, alternate operating locations for our missions. Those are the type of roles that are institutional that may be a good fit for our part-time force. And so that comes a little further in the implementation timeline of PMA, and I don't want anybody to be discouraged in that all the current positions that we're looking at through these boards are full-time at this point. But as we identify the requirements and we work through this implementation of a new human resource management, you know, system, there will be the opportunities for part-timers in the future. And, you know, like I said, the Space Force is doing their due diligence to make sure that this is implemented in a very thoughtful way. And we're not just, you know, going up blindly and you know, implementing things without putting a lot of thought into it.
Over. Hey, thanks for that. I appreciate it. So, and that's a really good point, right? We haven't really got into the, because we haven't worked the part-time opportunities out yet. And that's going to be another exciting phase of this. You know, as excited as we are to offer full-time opportunities to our teammates in the reserve, but once we have part-time positions that we can offer Guardians to do that, that'll be really exciting in the next kind of phase as we go on this journey for PMA. So I think we're out of time. So, hey, I just want to say thanks again. To, you know, Specialist Athena Reese. Thanks for dialing in. I appreciate and sharing with us today. And thanks for joining the team. Master Sergeant Tyler Mimic Oldenweller, thanks a lot. I appreciate you sharing as well. And of course, Chief Master Sergeant Todd Scott. You know, we try to have these podcasts on topics that we find that we hope are interest to our Guardians and our fellow listeners out there. They're informative. You know, we always try to have real talk to kind of share the good, the bad, and the ugly. So that's useful and informative to everyone who's dialing in. So thanks a lot. And just one last thing. So, you know, we're in the middle of November already. Man, can you believe it? So roll into holiday season. So please, everyone, be safe. Hope you get a chance to take a knee, see some family and friends. Big December coming up. So in addition to the birthday, I'm excited to hopefully see, you know, many of you at the Guardian Arena that we're going to have down in Cape Canaveral again this year. That's going to be a great opportunity. Another fun time to see that competitive spirit of all the teams. We've been rolling out the list of teams that made it to the finals out on social media. So get a chance to kind of take a look at that. Of course, then we have Space Force Association Conference that's going to happen down there right after. So if I get a chance to see you down there for some professional development and some engagement, and then of course the Space Force 10 miler for the third anniversary of the running of the 10 miler for our birthday. So hopefully we get a chance to maybe see you down there running on the roads of Cape Canaveral. I had a chance to do it last year. The weather was great, though you did have to outrun several of the alligators that were on the course, but it is Florida after all. But hey everyone, I look forward to seeing you out in the field. Thank you for what you're doing. Semper Supra out here.